Right. If you have a Bible, I want to invite you to turn to the book of John, chapter 6, and we're going to take a look at that in just a second. So, I've worked for a couple of different churches, and I know a lot of people who have worked for very, very large churches. We are not a large church. I don't know if you were surprised to hear that, but we're a very small church. And one of the things that you find among larger churches, and specifically churches that are continuing to try to get even larger, are there's lots of questions around things like marketing and questions around why do we do what we do, and like how do we promote this in a marketable sort of appealing sort of way, and the reason I bring that up is because we're in the series that we started last week called 104 Houston Street, which is our actual physical address here, and what we're trying to do with the series is we're trying to get at what are we doing here, and this is not just like an existential question, but like actually physically what are we doing here, and so we're trying to sort of get into why we do what we do, and it. Not just like in specifically in differentiation from other churches, but specifically like what exactly are we doing here? And so the reason I bring up the whole concept of church marketing is because one of the things that we sort of had to figure out early on is who are we trying to be, and what kind of image are we trying to project to people who don't attend here, and what kind of environment are we trying to create when we get here? Because there is in lots of circles, and if you go to like conferences or read certain kinds of books, there's lots of conversations surrounding the notion of you just need to seem you need to like make people think that you're cool, or you need to make people feel like you're relevant. These are the words that they use, and so like you might have somebody be like, okay, listen, the pastor wears jeans, and we saw a guy with a tattoo, so this is definitely exactly what we're looking for, and so there is this notion of like an image that is attempted to be projected. And first of all, before I go any further, please do not hear me like criticizing. I'm not trying to take cheap shots at churches that use church marketing as a strategy, even though that's you could. But what I'm trying to do is sort of get at why are we doing what we do here, and specifically what has my particular journey been in getting us to. Why do, like, because what we do is very different. And to the extent that, and my therapist has had a lot to say about this, but to the extent that when a new person comes through the door, my first impulse is to assume that they're going to hate it, and which is not like part of the church marketing strategy, like technique. And it all kind of comes from, I say it all comes from, like I had worked for a church for a while that a lot of you guys had been a part of that spent a lot of energy pouring itself into sort of this notion of the production elements, and like how do we need to advertise a lot, and when people come in there needs to be a certain kind of like multimedia experience, there needs to be a sense of like an event that they're attending, and for me, and this is I'm speaking only for myself, for me it began to feel disconnected from what I felt to be what I could participate in authentically, if that makes any sort of sense. And so the longer I participated in this, the more disingenuous it felt for me personally, and really it all kind of came to a head on the very last Sunday that I preached there, and I've actually never told this story in a sermon, so bear with me for a second. But I was supposed to preach in this new facility that they had just built, and in the new facility it was a really big stage. There were these screens, there were like 9 high definition screens like surrounding the stage. 3 of them were above the stage, and each one above the stage was roughly the size of a Fiat, and so it was a massive like high definition media cave. And so I had to show up an hour early, actually the day that I was supposed to preach, because I'd never done it before in this space, and I had to show up early specifically so that they could do like a test, like they could like light my face appropriately so that my face could be projected up on the screens, and they had all this tape on the stage that basically was like, okay, you can go here, but don't go here, because when you do that, you can't be on TV anymore. And so, like, you have to stay in range. Like, the stage is very big, but you actually have a very small space to work in, because, like, if you deviate from the path, then the video will look weird. And so, like, there was all sorts of, like, production elements that sort of went into it. And so so when I got up to preach my sermon, I felt so awkward and so uncomfortable, and I look out, I can barely see anybody because the lights are so bright, but the people that I could see are people that I know and people that I recognize and that are not that far away from me, but they're not looking at me. They're looking at my face on this giant car-sized screen right above my head. And so I'm feeling uncomfortable about that, first of all, and then I turn my head and I realize that because of the position of the screens, I can see myself. Which is horrible. Like, I don't know, have you ever been in a restaurant where there's a TV on and you can't stop looking at the TV? Imagine it's you on the TV and everything you do and say is on all the TVs and everybody else is also watching the TVs. Try and take your attention off that. So I am having the hardest time like focusing or having any sort of like sense of like normalcy in this space. And I had this moment of, I can't just not say anything. I can't, I feel way too awkward to pretend like I don't feel awkward. And so I said to the room, I said, okay, I just realized I can see myself on these screens, which means you can definitely see me on these screens. If this makes you uncomfortable, you have no idea how much more uncomfortable I feel about it than you do. So let's all agree that we're all uncomfortable and let's just like move on and pretend like it's normal. And everybody, mostly everybody laughed. And I say mostly because 4 days later I was fired from that job. So at least one person did not laugh. And so there was, at the time I was like, you know, traumatized by the whole experience, but at the same time, and there's more, like, it's actually a much longer story than that, but that's sort of like, those are the highlights. But I sort of had this sort of reckoning with myself of, yeah, I was super uncomfortable up there. And like there was something that felt totally disingenuous about all of it. And I realized, like, I know lots of pastors who work in churches that do this kind of thing, and they're great at it. And they're very natural at it, and they're not disingenuous as they do it. There's a certain personality type that thrives in that environment. I'm not that. I had a hard time feeling, because when I'm doing this, it feels really weird to be talking to people, but you know, like, you're not actually talking to people. And so there's this notion of I need to find a normal feel, like this needs to feel like a normal conversation, and it didn't. And so as we were sort of trying to figure out what are we going to do here, what's this space going to feel like, I kind of had to relive that a little bit and kind of go through like, well, what are we trying to do, and what are we also not trying to do? And again, lots of pastors out there can do that really well. I don't feel like I'm ever going to be that pastor. And so the question becomes, like, if we are going to create an environment, what needs to be in the room, and what definitely very explicitly needs to not be in the room? And so we pretty much kind of came to the decision of, we need to be technologically minimalist as best we can, because as I do this, I feel like this needs to feel like a conversation. For this to feel like something that I can invest myself in, and I can feel like this is what we're trying to do, it needs to feel like a conversation. And every media element that you add reduces, like, it creates an invisible barrier. And so we don't have an elevated stage. I don't use a mic. I mean, this is for the podcast, but it doesn't go anywhere, obviously. And so we have a sound system, but that's only because Brian Clark wouldn't leave me alone about it. And we and some of the musicians realized, like, yeah, actually our jobs would be easier if we didn't have to like scream at the top of our lungs as we're trying to sing these very like meaningful, worshipful songs. So we very reluctantly we added those kinds of things. And even to that, it really kind of came down to what is the least that we can have and still do this as well as we can do it and make it still feel like this is what we are trying to do, like feel like an authentic, engaged. And authentic a lot of times is like a buzzword. Like like churches use authentic as like one of their marketing terms, and that's not what we were trying to do. What I mean when I say that is, Can this feel like a conversation? Can this feel like something that we can engage in at a meaningful kind of human level? And it really all kind of came down to the question of, first of all, is bigger better? Because there are, and again, there's lots of really big churches that are great at being, like, if you were to ask me what are the five best churches in the U.S., at least two or three of the ones that I would name are mega churches. And so this is not like all big churches are bad, and certainly it doesn't mean all small churches are good. But what we are sort of getting at here is, does bigger make it better, or is sometimes bigger sort of the false goal that we're trying to pursue? Because if we get bigger, it will make us feel like we're better. In fact, if you were to get together in a room full of pastors that you didn't, like, anytime I get together with pastors that I don't know, like if I go to a conference or some other kind of thing, if I meet a pastor for the first time, within a minute of me meeting that person is gonna ask me, so how big is your church? And it sounds like normal conversation, but I'm telling you, pastors can be, and I say this as a pastor, pastors can be some of the most petty, competitive people you've ever met. And so a lot of times that question is, who's higher on the totem pole? Who's higher up on the pecking order here, you or me? Who's better at this, you or me? And so I always tend to answer, I really have no idea. That ends up being my, like, somebody's like, so how big is your church? I'm like, I don't know. And they hate that. And I do know, I just won't tell them. I'm not gonna play. And so it sort of comes down to, is bigger better? And is the thing that we're trying to create here supposed to, like, is the whole idea, we just need to make it bigger? Or is the idea of, or can the idea be, well, maybe bigger is fine if bigger means we're actually still doing the thing that we're trying to do. And maybe bigger is fine if it is an authentic, genuine reflection of what it is that you're trying to be as a church. And so, which brings us to John chapter 6. So in John chapter 6, Jesus has kind of reached the height of what it is that he's trying to do. Like, he's kind of reached the height of his popularity. There's right before the story we're going to look at, Jesus has just spoken to and fed 5,000 people, which is a mega church. That is a massive group of people. So, and so Jesus has been teaching, and he's been feeding people, which people love. And then at a certain point, Jesus leaves, and the crowd that Jesus has just interacted with is basically, they're saying, oh, we weren't done. We want more of whatever Jesus is trying to do here. So in John chapter 6, verse 22, it says, the next day, the crowd that had stayed on the opposite shore of the lake realized that only one boat had been there, and that Jesus had not entered it with his disciples, but that they had gone away alone. So at some point, the crowd realizes Jesus isn't here anymore. And so the question becomes, what are we going to do? So they begin to sort of stalk him, like very, like ex-boyfriend-ishly. And so eventually, they find him. And in verse 25, this is one of the funniest verses in the entire New Testament. It says, when they found him on the other side of the lake, they asked him, Rabbi, when did you get here? As if, like, what do you mean? That's like the, stop trying to play it cool. You know, we know you've been stalking this guy. And so it's like you're sitting in somebody's driveway with the motor running that you've been stalking for weeks. And you're like, what, you live here? I had no idea. And so they're trying to, anyway, that's just how I read it. Maybe I'm wrong. But that's, so anyway, this massive group of people is following Jesus, and they're super into what he's doing, and they just want more of it. But eventually, Jesus starts to preach, in a way that kind of begins to challenge people in a way that they're not prepared for. And people are not quite ready to hear what Jesus has to say in the way that he's challenging their views of God and faith and how we interact with, like, our surroundings and our neighbors and all these kinds of things. And he begins to really challenge this. And so in verse 59, it says, he, Jesus, said this while teaching in the synagogue in Capernaum. So he's not like just in somebody's backyard. He's in a major venue. And so he's in this major venue speaking to lots of people. And then in verse 60, it says, on hearing it, many of his disciples said, this is a hard teaching. Who can accept it? And then if you jump down to verse 66, it says, from this time, many of his disciples turned back and no longer followed him. This isn't like the spectators, like the spectators thinned out. These are disciples. These are people who were like bought in. And at a certain point, Jesus starts to preach in a way that makes even the people who are like totally like bought into this whole thing say like, I don't think this is what we signed. We were really hoping he would just keep playing the hits. And so now we're kind of confronted with, this is not what we signed up for. We can't go any further. And it says they all started to kind of walk away. And which, by the way, if you are a church growth strategist, which is a job that exists, if you were a church growth strategist, you would tell Jesus, knock it off. You're thinning out the crowd. Jesus is terrible at church growth. And so maybe that's the title of the sermon. I don't know. At least one email is in my future. I can promise you that. So anyway, what's going on here is rather than pursue the bigger equals better concept, Jesus is essentially saying, like, look, when the crowd gets bigger, that's when we start to really challenge people. And that's when we really see, like, who's here just because everybody else is here, and who's here because we're actually trying to do something meaningful in the world. And so, in fact, look at Luke chapter 21. This isn't directly about that idea, but I think it sort of follows the same kind of sensibility. So in Luke chapter 21, Jesus and his followers are in the temple in Jerusalem. And it says, as Jesus looked up, he saw the rich putting their gifts into the temple treasury. He also saw a poor widow put in two very small copper coins. Truly I tell you, he said, this poor widow has put in more than all the others. All these people gave their gifts out of their wealth, but she, out of her poverty, put in all she had to live on. So Jesus, they're watching people like give, which is an awkward thing to do. That's like the weirdest kind of people watching you can do. But so they're watching this kind of go down, and you have people who are very wealthy putting in large amounts, and you have this one person who is not wealthy at all putting in a very small amount, and Jesus sees the person putting in the small amount, and he says, apparently bigger is not necessarily better, because this group of people has bigger, has more, and this person has less. But somehow, in this moment, less is more, and more is less. Jesus seems to be practicing what some writers refer to as inverse fidelity, which is the notion of sometimes smaller is actually the picture of what it is we're trying to go for. Sometimes less is more. Because if the idea is bigger, if bigger is the goal, then everything we do will be in preservation of bigger or more. And so, which again, bigger is not in and of itself bad. The problem becomes when bigger becomes the goal. When the whole idea becomes, can we make this more? Can we make this bigger? How many more square feet can we add to the space? And so Jesus is, I think, in a lot of ways, confronting our very natural sort of inclination towards, yeah, maybe bigger isn't better. Like, one conversation that we've had a lot is the notion of, does the scoreboard really work the way that we think it does? And so we tend to sort of think in terms of, like, the higher the number, the better, the more healthy, the better, the more valuable the thing is. But Jesus continues to push back against this notion, and he says, yeah, but the person who puts in less actually put in more than the people who put in more. And so, or like, the moment that the crowd gets big is the moment that Jesus begins to really kind of push and say, maybe you're not signing up for the thing that you think you're signing up for. And so, which also sort of confronts the notion of, as a church, is the idea to get bigger. In fact, a lot of times, again, if I were to talk to pastors or even just people who are just curious about our church, one of the questions is, like, what's your growth strategy? Or, well, like, what are you going to do to get bigger? Like, how many, what if you have to add more services? And my first answer is, like, I don't think that's going to be a problem. But the thing sort of becomes, like, is that really the goal? And don't get me wrong, like, if people discover this church, like, my hope is that we can be a church that people find and, like, stumble into in any kind of way and feel like, oh, this is the kind of environment that I really want to be a part of. It's one thing to create an environment that you hope people can find and be a part of and have a healthy experience with. It's a whole other thing for the, like, let's flood the place with as many people as we can, because that's how we sort of gauge our sense of worth or value in this place. You know what I mean? And so, and I'll just, in the name of full disclosure, like, we're not totally against all marketing. Like, that's, like, we bought an ad in the Byron Nelson football program. I couldn't come up with the word program to save my life. We've put out some, like, Facebook ads. We've done a very minimal amount of, like, what we'll call marketing. But at the same time, the idea is not like, oh, this will be the thing that really puts us over the top. The idea is, like, we just want to make sure people who are looking for something like this know that we're here. And in fact, I read a book right before we started the church. I read a book by a pastor, a legendary pastor by the name of Eugene Peterson. And if you're unfamiliar with his work, he translated the Message translation that I'm sure a lot of us probably have read or been given a copy of. And Eugene Peterson has been a pastor most of his life. He's in his 80s now, but he wrote a memoir about what it was like to be a pastor. And one of the things he writes in his book, and this one line really affected me, he wrote in his book that he never, even when he was doing his best, he said, I never really felt like I could pastor, I never really felt like I could adequately pastor more than 300 people. And what he means by that is, like, there comes a point where you stop feeling like a pastor and you start feeling like a business owner or like a CEO. And so Eugene Peterson's point of view on that was, like, that's not what I signed up for. That's not what I wanted to do. I can only effectively pastor up to 300 people. And so I'm reading that and I'm thinking, well, if Eugene Peterson can only handle 300, I probably max out somewhere at, like, 150. And some of you are thinking, like, no, you maxed that way before that, pal. And so the notion of, like, is bigger better, like, to me, I read that, and that's always been sort of where I go back, where I think, like, well, maybe smaller gives us the ability to, or, like, when we free ourselves from the need to get bigger, we set ourselves, we empower ourselves to do lots of other things. And so, again, when we moved into the space, this space will fit, according to the fire marshal, this space will fit roughly 100 people, like that's where we kind of max out. And we have two services on Sundays. And again, like, people would ask, what happens if you, like, have this, like, massive amount of growth? That was never really a concern. And the thing is, I'm comfortable with that, because if we have two services and this place totally fills up for both services, we cap it about 200. So I feel like, there are 50 people who are probably going to feel like I'm doing a terrible job. But there's at that moment, like, that's about as big as we can go, and me still feel like I'm able to be your pastor. And again, there's lots of other pastors who have different thresholds for this, and I'm really speaking just for myself here. And what I don't want this to feel like is a critique of other churches. And I'm sorry to be overly apologetic about it, but I certainly don't want people to feel like I'm saying, like, the way we do this is right and the way everybody else does this is wrong, because there's lots of other churches that can take a look at what we're doing and tell you all the ways that we're doing it wrong, and they would mostly probably be right. But what I'm trying to get at here is, what is it that brought us to this moment? And why do what we do in the way that we do it? And so that's why we attempted to be technologically minimalist, because I wanted to kind of celebrate the beauty of what a small church can do. In fact, if you go to like a large church conference or go to a conference led by a church, like pastors of mega churches, one of the things that they'll often talk about in sessions is, okay, pastors of mega churches, let's talk about how we can make your church feel smaller. And so they'll talk about like how to break off into groups and do all kinds of other things that sort of simulate the idea of a small church. Why? Because there's this understanding that once you get to a certain size, it no longer feels like a community. And so like there are pastors out there who have to spend lots and lots of energy attempting to make their church feel like our church already feels. And so, and again, there are lots of things that larger churches can do that we can't do. There are lots of, like, we've been trying to respond to hurricane needs as best we can. Larger churches can mobilize in ways that we never will be able to. But there is something about the small church. And I really felt like as we got this thing going, I really felt like, what if we just celebrate that? What if we create space where we can celebrate the fact that sometimes less is more, sometimes smaller is bigger, and sometimes we can, the thing that we have to bring to the table is not who we wish we were, but who we already are. And so so the goal isn't size. So if the goal isn't size, what are we trying to do here? So take a look at the book of Acts chapter 2. So in Acts chapter 2, we looked at this last week. I just think this passage is so instructive for churches. This is a paragraph that describes sort of the atmosphere of the early church in the first century. And it says they devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and to the fellowship, to the breaking of bread and to prayer. Everyone was filled with awe at the many wonders and signs performed by the apostles. All the believers were together and had everything in common. They sold property and possessions to give to anyone who had need. Every day they continued to meet together in the temple courts. They broke bread. By the way, second time the mention of breaking bread is here. So they broke bread in their homes and ate together with glad and sincere hearts, praising God and enjoying the favor of all the people. And the Lord added to their number daily those who were being saved. There are two points here where specifically the shared meal is mentioned. And there's all sorts of social psychological research that's been done on, like, why is the shared meal, when you share a meal with someone, there is a social connection that is made that you cannot have from listening to a lecture or like going to a movie or something else. There is something about sitting down for a meal with somebody that has a power that other things don't have. And we could get in, if we had more time, we could get into all the reasons why that is, and it's fascinating. But the ultimate, I mean, kind of the end result of it is, what do we do to remind people that we're here to kind of create or to foster or to allow space for a kind of community? And part of that is we do as much as we can to have a shared meal, which is why we have brunch between services as often as we can. And it's not just because we really love brunch, although we do. But it's also because there is something that happens when people share a meal together. That's the only time when people who go to different services are able to see each other, even in church our size. And that's why we're doing these fall dinner groups, because we want to give people as much time and opportunity to create space to have a meal together, because there is something that happens. There is something powerful and divine that happens when you sit down and share a meal with somebody else. In fact, when we first started this, the very first thing we ever did was at this airplane hangar up at Link Up International. We talked about this last week, but it was a church service, but before it was a church service, it was just a meal. Like we had a church service, but we started the thing an hour early so that we could have time for people to bring pasta dishes and for everybody to eat. And so for an hour, it was just everybody hanging out and having a meal. And the idea from that kind of came, well, first of all, if people were going to come, we wanted to reward them with food. But there was also this thing, this woman told me before we even got started, and she said, this is a woman who grew up in a family who had come from Mexico, and she said, she said, I always wanted to find a church that felt like one of my family's Sunday like family reunions. And which is to say, like, lots of people and everybody brings food. And so I heard that and I thought, like, that's a great idea. Like, that is the kind of church, like, I can't do, like, fog machines and high-definition TVs or anything like that. I can do, let's all bring some food and make this thing feel like a giant family reunion. You know what I mean? And so that's been the hope. That's kind of been what we've been kind of striving for after this woman said that to me. Because I really like that. Like, that's a thing I connect with. And so what are we trying to do here? We're trying to create space for people to break bread and to share meals. This is why we do communion as often as we can, because for one of the many reasons, because at one level we can't do like a brunch every single week. Logistically, it's very, very difficult to do that. But we can symbolically remind each other that we're all invited to the table, and we can break bread, we can have the body broken and blood poured out. And so And so we wanted to kind of celebrate the shared meal aspect of being a part of a church. So there's that, but then there's also in Hebrews chapter 10, if you have a bulletin that's on the back of that, if you want to take a look. But in Hebrews 10, verse 24, this writer says this. And let's see. Okay, it says, "And let us consider how we may spur one another on or encourage one another towards love and good deeds, not giving up meeting together as some are in the habit of doing, but encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day approaching." So at one level, when this group of people gets together, there's a meal. At another level, there is a sense of, we're trying to breathe encouragement into you. We're trying to add life to your experience of your life. We're trying to bring some amount of grace and peace and love and hope into your world, which is why we spend so much time emphasizing grace and peace. Our hope is that when you leave, you will leave more encouraged than when you arrived. And I know that for a lot of us, we grew up in church, and church every week was kind of a beating, because there was a lot of talk about like all the things that you're not doing right, and all the things that you need, like all the reasons like God is angry at you, and all the things that you need to fix before you come back next week. And so people often would leave like feeling like kind of drained and beaten down. And my hope is that when people leave here on Sunday mornings, that they have, even if it's only like 5% more life or peace or hope or grace in them. I mean, 5% more is 5% more, and I'll take it. And so my hope is that you leave feeling more hopeful and peaceful and full of grace than you did when you came in. So our goal here is to create space where people can interact and connect with one another. Our hope is also that you can encounter some amount of grace and peace, so that you can leave feeling more encouraged than you felt when you arrived. So there's a lot of things that we're trying to do. We wanted to create space that could be defined by grace and peace. We wanted to create space that where people could sit for an hour or so and feel encouraged and hopeful. We also wanted to create space where people could step into an ongoing conversation about faith and God and life that felt genuine and curious and authentic. But we also wanted to create space where people could get to know each other and break bread together and experience, like just get to like have an encounter with another person that's human, that it wasn't simulated or pre-scheduled or planned like that. And so there's a lot of things that we're trying to do. And if we were to say, if one of our major goals was, well, we just gotta get bigger, we gotta make the thing bigger, then that's a lot of energy that we can't be pouring into these other things. Like we only have so much bandwidth. And so we can either as a church pour all of our energy and time into getting bigger, or we can pour all of our energy and time into having a table that we all share, and to encouraging one another, and to creating space and time for people to encounter some amount of faith or hope or grace or peace or love. And so we only have so much energy to do so much. And so the question is bigger better? Well, for us, if we started pursuing bigger, then we would probably have to start leaving some of these things behind. And again, that doesn't mean we don't want people to discover us, but my hope is that when people discover us, they discover that they were looking for a church that provides an open table and an experience of hope and grace and peace. And so engages the question of, well, like, what are we trying to do? What kind of space are we trying to create? And Rachel Held Evans, in her book, Searching for Sunday, which was also super useful and helpful to me as we were sort of getting going. She writes in her book, she says, "Like every generation before ours and after, we are looking for Jesus. The same Jesus who can be found in the strange places he's always been found, in bread, in wine, in baptism, in the word, in suffering, in community, and among the least of these. No coffee shops or fog machines required." So that is what we're after. That's kind of what we're getting at. So the question becomes, okay, well, that's what we as a church are trying to do. So like, as I'm telling you all this, the question I hope becomes like, okay, well, what do we do? How do we participate in that kind of thing? So I'm gonna offer two things, and they're super easy. And one is be here, which, by the way, you're doing great today on that one. So that was a joke. No, so because you're all here, get it? So and what I mean by be here is, I mean like be fully present. Understand that you are here, and that you being here is beautiful. Like you are in this, like right now is right now, and you are in this place right now. And so the question becomes, what does it mean for me to be here? Because if I'm gonna be here, I can't be in all the places that I'm gonna have to be later today. Are you with me? So this means I have to kind of shut down the part of my brain that needs to check my phone and make sure like like, are we gonna make it to soccer on time, or are we gonna, that's us, or are we gonna, what are all the other to-do lists? Like, do we have enough for like school lunches for like the kids to go to school tomorrow? Like all the things, like I can be here or I can be in all those other places while my body is here. And so I would say, like, first of all, be here, like allow yourself to be fully present in this place right now. And so, which is to say, like, talk to people that you don't know. Invite someone to lunch. Like, if somebody invites you to lunch, go to lunch with them. And also, I would encourage, just ask the question, like, you chose this church. Like, for most of you here, you're here more, like, today is not your first day. And if it is, thanks for being here. But if it's, if today isn't your first day, if you've been here for a while, you chose to be here. And so, what does that mean? Like, what is it, like, why seek, like, there's so many churches. There are so many churches in this area. Like, you didn't have to be here, but you chose to be here. And so why? What is it about this kind of church that made you say, okay, this is kind of more in line with what I'm kind of looking for. This is the kind of environment that I want to participate in. Why? And so I would encourage you, like, figure that out and then ask, like, okay, well, then how can I be a part of it? And how can I participate in it? Because when you're here, you're here. So be here. And so help us. Help us make this place more a place where people can feel encouraged and people can feel like they're sharing a table with other people. And so so that's the first thing. And the second thing I would say is very similar, which is be open. Which is to say, engage. Like, be, ask yourself, what do I have to receive today? Because again, it's really easy to sort of shut down and have all this list, or it's possible to, for an hour a week, say, maybe there's something I need to receive, and what would it mean for me to do that? So take deep breaths. Turn off your phone. Stop thinking about whatever the next thing is, and just and ask, What is it that I need to receive? And for some of us, it is, I need to receive some amount of encouragement. I need to be affirmed in that, like, you are loved and you are valued. And maybe if that's what you need to receive, be open enough to receive it. Maybe you needed to receive some amount of grace or peace. Maybe you needed to be challenged in some sort of way. Maybe there's a way that you've always thought things were, and the more we talk and the more we sort of engage the conversation, not unlike some of the people who walked away from Jesus in John 6, maybe it's, oh, maybe there's some new ways of thinking I need to engage. So I would say be here and be open. What does it mean for us to participate in this place at this time? And we're so glad that you're here. And I realize, like, as I'm talking about, like, bigger isn't better and all these kinds of things, please know I am so glad that you're here. And when you walk through the door and you are and you trust us with an hour of your time, I don't take that lightly. None of us do. So I'm thrilled that you have found space in this place for you and for your family. And I hope that this can be a healthy space for you, and that this can be a place for healing and for growth and for all the things that a church needs to be. So that's my hope for us. So we're gonna take communion, because we need to be reminded once again that we're all invited to sit at the table and to break bread together. And then when Jesus invites us to the table, he breaks himself open and he pours himself out and he offers himself to each of us. And so so may you find this space to be a place of healing and hope and grace and peace for you. And may you encounter church or this group of people in a way that gives you life. And may you engage in a way that reminds you that you can be a part of it too. That this isn't something you just have to watch. You can actually participate at whatever level you want to. May you go to lunch. May you make friends. May you find that there is new life bubbling just under the surface. So let me pray for us, and then if you want, you can take communion. If you don't want to, that's totally okay. Everyone is welcome. We have wine and grape juice. We have normal bread and gluten-free. Is normal bread, is that pejorative to people who only eat gluten-free? I didn't mean to be insensitive. So let me pray for us, and we'll do that. God, we thank you for the invitation to be in this space. And may we always remember that bigger is not necessarily better. May we celebrate where we are now in this place. May we be reminded that we get to do this, and that this place right now, right here, this is a gift. And may we celebrate that. May we find that there is life in this place. May we engage. May we be here. May we be open. And for our brothers and sisters at other churches that are larger and that do things differently than we do, May they experience those things as well. May they experience community and life and goodness. May they encounter one another and you in all sorts of specific ways. May we as a people
celebrate grace and peace wherever we find it. And may we continue to be challenged to create space here at this address, in this time, in this place. May we continue to be challenged to do this in the way that is true to who we are, so that we can more effectively serve one another and serve you. In the name of Jesus, we pray. Amen.